Bethesda Theater presents Spyro Gyro, celebrating their 50th anniversary on Sunday, October 13th, and Norman Brown on Sunday, October 20th. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
Hello, I'm David Whetstone, and you're listening to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Good evening. It's just about 6 p.m. in the nation's capital. The name of the show is News Views. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. And oh, by the way, I'm standing by for a very, very special guest to call in hopefully any minute now. And that guest, some of you listening to the show may have heard him before, Dr. Julius Garvey. Dr. Garvey is, and this is hard to believe, the son of Marcus Garvey. That's right, Dr. Julius Garvey is Marcus Garvey's son. He's a brilliant man, great guy, and hopefully he'll call in soon. We will talk, and I'm sure I'm going to open up the phones. I'm sure some people will be very excited about having an opportunity to talk to Dr. Garvey. You know, I've been on PFW a long time. I remember back when, before his passing, when Paul Robeson Jr. used to come on, and it was really such a pleasure. It made me feel good about being on WPFW that I got the opportunity to bring Paul Robeson Jr. on, and that people could call and have a chance to talk to the son of such a legend, and a legend himself. And I feel the same way about Dr. Garvey. I mean, you know, we read about Marcus Garvey. For those who don't know, he's the one who came up with the red, black, and green flag for African heritage. Just an absolute brilliant man. And of course, do I have to tell you, as always, the FBI set him up and, you know, did the usual that they did to so many black leaders. And Dr. Garvey is actually now working on a project to get his father posthumously, get all the charges dropped, get everything dropped from him posthumously and clear his name. So we're hoping that happens. Not yet. Okay, we're standing by for he should be calling in any minute. I was just in contact with his public relations people. You know, interestingly, before we get there, I read an article in the Washington Post today that I got to touch base on, and it was Barack Obama, and he was admonishing black men. And basically what he was saying is, you know, there's a lot of black men out here that won't vote for Kamala Harris. And, you know, I got a problem with that. And she's black, and you got to vote for her, right? And I thought to myself, man, that ain't no way to talk to people, you know, and let me tell you why. If something's going on, if there's a problem, if there's an issue, right? You're doing something that I don't want you to do, or you're not doing something that I want you to do. How do I address it? Number one, I got to ask you why. I can't say to you, you have to do this. You need to do this. What, for me? As you've heard me say many times, everybody's listening to the same radio station, WIIFM. What's in it for me? I used to be a salesperson. And in sales, you have to tell the potential customer what's in it for them. And instead, it's you have to do this. And, well, what do you know? Enough of that. We got bigger fish to fry right now. And again, you know, I am very, very proud to have my next guest on. A wonderful man, a friend of mine, and a guy that I'm very, very proud to know. The son of Marcus Garvey, Dr. Julius Garvey. Dr. Garvey, welcome back to our humble station here in Washington, D.C.
And thanks so much for having me, Carla.
Yeah, let me just say,
to be back.
Oh, I'm proud to have you on. It was wonderful meeting you when you came to town. And are you still? You're in New York area?
No, I'm in Florida. We just had our hurricane pass through.
Oh my gosh! Well, glad to hear you made it out of that one. Okay. Wonderful.
Fortunate.
Yes. Well, wonderful. So let's start here. As I said, you know, it's very, very, we're very proud and fortunate to have you on. And hopefully a little later in the show, I'll open up the phone calls if some people may want to call in and say something to you. But I understand you've got a new book coming out. Tell us about that, Dr. Garvey.
Yes, actually, it's wonderful. It's called Justice for Garvey. And it really, you know, relates to the problems that my, you know, father had with J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI, and, you know, different other groups back in the 20s when he was brought up on, you know, false charges, again, with no evidence, but put in jail nevertheless. And, you know, the effort has been ongoing, you know, for now basically 100 plus years, because this is way back in 1923 and with the trial. And of course, he went to prison in 1925 and then was deported in 1927. Anyway, this is a book called Justice for Garvey, Look for Me in the Whirlwind. And it has many, many contributors, both legal experts as well as, you know, different figures. And we're fortunate to have a foreword by best-selling author Ta-Nehisi Coates. Of course, he was just in the news recently.
Yes.
And of course, he's a good friend and you know, an honest person and a just person. And we support him as well as he supports us.
Well, that's absolutely wonderful. You know, I've watched the Jack Johnson documentary, Unforgivable Blackness. And as I've told you before, I was one of my mentors was Paul Robeson Jr. You know, and when I look at the history of black men in this country who were leaders, who fought for civil rights in America, who fought for African people worldwide for freedom, they were always attacked by the system. If you could talk about what happened to your father. Some, you know, a lot of our listeners probably don't know about the injustice and what happened. Maybe you could let people who maybe don't know that much about what happened, how they went after him, the trial, the empty envelope, etc.
That's exactly right. It was really going after him because he had the most successful movement nationally and internationally in terms of African unity and African people coming together for their own improvement. And again, you know, this was a period of the 20s and just before the 20s, the teens and the 20s, just after the First World War, when, you know, things were pretty much in turmoil. What there was, you know, hope for change because a lot of, you know, young African-American men went to fight in the First World War there for democracy overseas and came back and expected change. Plus the fact that that was the time when there was migration from the agricultural South to the industrial North. About a million young black, mostly young black men traveled, you know, from the South from, say, 1915 to 1925, about a million. To the industrial North, which was, you know, Detroit and Chicago, the Midwest, Philadelphia, and so on. So African people were being, African Americans were becoming urbanized instead of being on sharecropping, etc. And coming together as a people, you know, post slavery, hopefully post sharecropping, to find out, you know, how do we make a life here in America or elsewhere, you know, independent of the white harassment that they had in the South by the Ku Klux Klan and under the Jim Crow system. And, you know, my dad came into that scenario with his message, shall we say, of racial pride, unity, self-sufficiency, and self-determination. It caught on like wildfire in North Amatal in the early 20s, and certainly they had the first international convention in 1920, and it was, you know, attended by more than 2,000 delegates from all over the world. And at that time also, he had more than 2 million followers, which grew to more than 6 million followers in a few years, you know, in 40 different countries, more than 1,000 Liberty Halls. So it was a massive movement that was threatening the power structure here in the United States, which is an apartheid system, as well as the colonial system abroad, because that was the period of colonialism. Colonialism started as a successor to enslavement of our people in 1884, 1885. So this was the period of turmoil and change. And my father brought hope to millions of people with his organization, the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League. And it was then, you know, attacked by the nascent FBI with J. Edgar Hoover at the helm. He was a young lawyer who was given this post. So he set out to sabotage the organization and subsequently also to destroy my father's reputation. But of course, they attempted to kill him in 1919. Somebody came into the office and fired several bullets at him. Two grazed him, but the person was caught and handed over to the police. But of course, he died in police custody within 24 hours, supposedly committing suicide. Somebody sent him. And then, so that didn't work. So they were going after him legally. So in terms of the details of the trial, the judge should have recused himself because that was a turbulent ideological time as well as a turbulent physical time, meaning that, that was the period of the Russian Revolution, 1917, the Bolshevik Revolution, and then the beginning of international communism. So several African-American people, leaders, thought that either communism or socialism was the way forward to ameliorate, white supremacy, that the communists and so on would be colorblind. My dad didn't subscribe to that. And also there was the integrationist movement, put forward by the NAACP, which, obviously still exists, but its tone has changed to some degree. But, there were antagonistic ideologies. My father was his ideology was definitely on in terms of independence and self-development. Owning your own businesses, building your own communities, etc., and uniting with African people all over the world. And of course, there was the business aspect of it. There was the international aspect of it with the Black Star Line and so on. So they conceived that as a one way to get at him in terms of the Black Star Line and stock. And the accusation was using the mails to defraud. And of course, it was interesting that defraud black people. It's interesting that this would be a trial of a black man defrauding black people. And of course, some black people supported this. Like I said, the NAACP was antagonistic as well as the African Blood Brotherhood, which was the communist group. So, they were antagonistic to my dad's organization, and they supported this, the trial. But, of course, the FBI was the main instigator, per se. And I think you mentioned also, there was absolutely no evidence. There was an empty envelope that was put as testimony or the major
evidence.
Evidence. And all it had was the stamp of the UNIA on the front and on the back, but of course, with no content. And then the witness couldn't remember what was in it. And he also, the star witness, perjured himself, and he was coached to perjure by the prosecuting attorney. And this was brought out in court by my dad, who defended himself. The prosecuting attorney told him to lie that he was employed at the UNIA at a certain date, and he was the one that mailed the envelope with the circular. When it was shown that he was a lie, he never worked at the UNIA, and there was no circular to put in evidence, just the empty envelope. And also, the judge should have recused himself because he was not only sympathetic to the NAACP, he was a member. He read their newspaper, The Crisis. I subscribed to it, and he gave money to the NAACP, which was an antagonistic organization in terms of the trial of my dad and the UNIA. So all of these things, indicate that it was a trumped up political trial to destroy the reputation of Marcus Garvey and to destroy the organization. And, he ended up being convicted and sentenced to 5 years in prison and a $1,000 fine. He went to prison, but there was so much uproar that, in terms of petitions, marches, etc., that Calvin Coolidge ended up commuting the sentence after 3 years, but then he was deported to Jamaica. He involved himself there in politics and continued the organization from there.
Wow. Well, once again, we're talking to Dr. Julius Garvey. He is the son of Marcus Garvey, and he has a new book out. What's the name of the book again?
It's called Justice for Marcus Garvey. Look for me in the whirlwind.
Great. It's available at broadleafbooks.com and on Amazon. You know, you mentioned Ta-Nehisi Coates, and he is a man who is, stood up for what he believed in when it comes to the Palestinian issues. He's gone on television where, there are a lot of black people that, go along with whatever the mainstream media tells them so they can stay, mm-hmm. Get the big paychecks and keep their mm-hmm. face on the air. And Mr. Coates has been attacked because he's taken a position of principle. I've watched some of the interviews, and he sounds like a kind person. He sounds like a man who's standing for what he believes in morally. Mm-hmm. And I just watch what is like brutal frontal attacks. Your thoughts on the current plight of Ta-Nehisi Coates?
I'm sorry.
On the current plight of the system going after Mr. Coates. And I think it's important for this reason, in the same way they went after your father, and as we said, Paul Robeson Jr., and any black person that stands up against the system and says, I have a moral position that the system doesn't like. Your thought on what's happening now with Mr. Coates?
Absolutely. What was done to my father was simply a precursor. It was continued. And it has continued, with Malcolm X. We know that he was murdered, and there was something strange about how he was murdered, and the incitement and the discord, within the Black Muslim community, and who instigated that. The same thing with Martin Luther King. The same thing with the Panthers. The same thing that's going on now with the socialist movement here in the United States. So this has been continuous. And that was the beginning of the so-called COINTELPRO movement. And, he's stood up certainly for human rights, the rights of African Americans. He's definitely a supporter of reparations. He's spoken out on that, and he's spoken out for the Palestinian people in terms of, a two-state situation where, with equal opportunities for both the Palestinians and the Jews in terms of the land itself. And of course, millions and millions of people, support that. And the response of Israel, is horrendous. It's being, ascribed to, one particular group per se, but by and large, it's a blot on the reputation, shall we say, of Jewish people per se. The way in which the response has been in Palestine, because the response has been, in severe excess of the provocation. There was a provocation, but the response has been basically genocidal, which includes, the murder of women and children, the destruction of, civilian space and so on and so forth. I think, he covered all that, quite well in his interview. And, I support a two-state solution. And I think most sensible people, do. And then international community, I think is lacking willpower. This has been brought to the International Court of Justice, but it doesn't seem that there's an ability to really stop Israel at this point, whether it's just Zionists or what. But that this is what is happening. People are being killed as civilians in the crossfire of war, and that's just totally. Immoral.
Once again, we're talking with Dr. Julius Garvey. We're fortunate enough to have him. I'm very, very proud to have Dr. Garvey on. He is the son of Marcus Garvey. And what I'm going to do now, we're going to continue to talk, but I'm going to open up some of the phones. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. 588-0893. You get an opportunity to say hi, to say what you want to Dr. Julius Garvey, the son of Marcus Garvey. And I mean, some people may just want to come in and say hello to pay their respects to him and his father. Whatever you want to say, 202-588-0893. We're talking with Dr. Julius Garvey, the son of the great man, Marcus Garvey, and a man who has a new book out. It's called Justice for Marcus Garvey. Look for me in the whirlwind. And you know, I understand that you've been working on this for a while. You've been approaching presidents, you've been approaching politicians, and so far, not a lot of luck. If you could, you know, what's going on with that? Why do you think you're having we're having so much trouble? Something that should be simple, should be very, very simple.
Well, I think we really touched on it. You know, Marcus Garvey represented the hopes and aspirations of African people worldwide. And you can see that African people worldwide are still being oppressed. We've gone from being enslaved to being colonized. And then now we have globalization, which in many places is neocolonialism. The same power structure is utilizing resources of African people. And what African people are being impoverished. So the situation hasn't changed that much. So that the ideology and the strength of the organization of a person like Marcus Garvey and the UNIA is sorely needed, so that every time a leader arises, whether it's Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana or Patrice Lumumba, or, you know, they've been assassinated or regime change and a coup has been engineered. So, you know, that's why you have all of this instability continuing. And if you have all of this, quote, so-called terrorist activity, you know, a lot of it is people simply wanting to reclaim their land and reclaim their nation in terms of the resources and using it for their own betterment. So, you know, it's a continuing struggle.
Well, Dr. Garvey, we do have a couple of phone callers. Two things. Number one, when you call, make sure you keep the phone to your ear. If you set the phone down, we have a 10-second delay. And when I call for you, you won't hear me for 10 seconds. Make sure you keep the phone close to your ear. And no speaker phones, please. They sound terrible on the radio. You are now on the you're on the air with Dr. Julius Garvey, the son of Marcus Garvey. First caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, I'm calling from Washington, D.C., right up. And Marcus Garvey has been one of the few selected sons of Africa. He has imbued Kwame Nkrumah, Dr. Nnamdi Azikiwe, and many, many other African scholars, many African students that were here. In fact, right now we are thinking about the United States of Africa. That was an inspiration from Marcus Garvey. Gaddafi was trying to do it in 2017. If they had not assassinated him, he would have brought us together in 2017. But they killed him in 2011. This is the point of my question. Unfortunately, the person who killed him, who could have prevented his being murdered in Tripoli, was Obama, who was the first black president. He would have actually used his influence and his power as the president of the United States to prevent this outstanding African son from being murdered, but he allowed them and they kept him murdered.
All right, thank you. All right, thank you very much, Dr. Garvey.
Yeah, Gaddafi was a very strong Pan-Africanism, was using his resources to support the Organization of African Unity, he was very much pro. United States of Africa, just as Kwame Nkrumah was, and we're still, you know, very, very, you know, far from that. And of course, with the murder of Gaddafi and the destruction, the civil disturbance, and the invasion, basically, of Libya. Many terrorist organizations were unleashed, and there has been a lot of terrorist activity in the Sahel region and places like, you know, Mali and Burkina Faso and Niger. That has created significant instability in that region. And that's why now we have those coups there, trying to restore some authority and dignity to the people, and to get the French out there and to get remove the terrorists, because the French have been colonialists all along, but they've never left. And so they've continued in much of the Sahel states and West Africa. So, you know, the struggle continues, and we just have to keep at it too. We still have quite a long way to go, and there's always subversion, you know, because that's how they continue to take our resources, by destabilizing the government of the country, and then coming in and taking the resources with weak governments or puppet governments, puppet leaders.
Mm-hmm. The number, once again, the number is 202-588-0893. We have open lines. We're talking with Dr. Julius Garvey. He is the son of the great and wonderful, brilliant leader, Marcus Garvey. 202-588-0893. Next call, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Mike, and I'm calling from D.C.
You're on with Dr. Garvey, Mike. Make sure if you have the radio in the background, make sure you turn that down so it doesn't confuse us. But you're on, Mike.
Yes, sir. Hey, how you gentlemen doing?
Wonderful.
This is a timely program. First and foremost, I want to thank Garvey's son for his contribution, and I want to thank him for his father's contributions. And I just want to comment on the fact that earlier I was listening to an earlier program, and they was talking about voting for Kamala Harris, and some of the callers that called up who disagreed with the things that the host was saying. As far as voting for Kamala Harris, it seemed like they was putting a nail, because they chose not to vote for her, and it seemed like they was questioning their intelligence for not doing so. And I'm one of those people that I'm not voting for her.
Let me just say this, and you're talking to one. I don't support the system. I don't support the Democrats or the Republicans. I'm opposed to imperialism. I'm opposed to the wars all over the world, and sticking a black person in front of my face to continue war and oppression is not going to convince me to support war and oppression. So I understand where you're coming from, my brother.
And I'm in total agreement with you. I don't think that we should vote on personality or skin color. I'm sure she's not going to do no more than Obama did when he was up in there. And my thing is this: why keep doing the same thing, expecting a different result?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're on with Dr. Garvey. Let's get Dr. Garvey. I'm not asking you to say any more than, you know, not your support or don't support, but your thoughts on our caller's comments, Dr. Garvey.
Yeah, well, basically, you might say I'm prejudiced because I always vote Democratic. Because I think the Democrats have done a great deal for us, you know, certainly since 64, 65, you know, the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Acts, et cetera, and coming up to the present. But I think what's important is if you don't vote for Kamala Harris, that's a vote for Donald Trump. And the difference between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump.
I would prefer to vote a cartoon character up in there before I vote any Democrat or Republican.
Hold on. Let's let Dr. Go ahead.
No, I'm finished. I said, to me, it's a no contest. If you want Trump as president, then don't vote for Kamala Harris.
Right. Okay, go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I would prefer just to put in a write-in for a cartoon character rather than to give my vote to any one of them, because I know that neither one of them is going to help black folks.
Thank you.
Neither one of them.
Yeah, well, and, you know, and one thing I believe in and I respect people, but look, it's people are going to choose the way they're going to choose, and the wars will continue. The wars will continue.
And let me leave you with this. Brother wrote a book called The Miseducation of the Negro. And he said that it was two kind of education. He said it was the one that we give ourselves and the one that the other give us. The one that the other give us is intended to serve them, and the one that we give ourselves is intended to serve us. We need to self-educate ourselves and break away from this Eurocentric kind of thinking and start voting in our own interest. That's what black people need to do.
Thank you very much. All right, got one more caller. Next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Ted from Upper Marlboro, Maryland. How you doing?
Wonderful, Ted. What's happening?
Well, I wanted to ask the guest, Mr. Garvey, if we always have had a problem really communicating, because I heard him talk about his fear that we'll get something worse and we have to vote for the lesser of two evils, is what it sounds like, what he's saying. And I'm just thinking back historically, your father came along right after the Buffalo Soldiers. And who did the Buffalo Soldiers fight? Indians. Who did Obama displace? Somebody who wanted black unity worldwide. Who is Kamala Harris? Are we even hearing that Kamala Harris is supporting apartheid, genocide, segregation in another country, white supremacy in another country where one group has privileges that other groups doesn't have, and because they're the chosen ones? How is it that we can unify among our own worldwide values and our own worldwide needs? Because if we say this is best for us here, but it's not good for the world, and we got 40,000 non-white people dying in direct attacks with 14,000 bombs put in by the United States, and the lady who is part of the administration doing it is saying they have a right to defend themselves. What can we do? Because we are falling backwards, and I think we're falling backwards by voting for the lesser of two evils.
Dr. Harvey.
Well, you know, I did express a comment about the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, history will bear me out, or has borne me out, actually. You know, but, you know, we are problematic in the United States. We're a minority. And, you know, if you remember, you know, my father said this 100 years ago. You're a minority of African Americans in a majority country of Euro-Americans, largely, who are significantly prejudiced against you. So to believe that you're going to get so-called equal treatment over time is really dreaming, shall we say. You know,
right,
things will improve and things have improved. But America is America. And,
right, but Dr.
Know,
Gavin,
I don't
do you
know that
think
there's
that
any revolution that is going to transform America overnight, or I don't know, maybe even in the next 25 years. America has been America, let's just say, since Marcus Garvey 100 years ago. It has changed some. Change has been superficial. How much more it will change, you know, we don't know. But maybe you can get some incremental change, positive change, I would say, you know, with a Democratic candidate, with a Kamala Harris. But that's not a certainty. You know, nobody can predict the future. I mean, America is the America. It doesn't even matter who the president is, because there's a power structure that determines what the president can do, what will happen in the Congress. If you look at just one last point,
sure.
If you look at it now, the reason why the Congress is still, you know, supporting what Israel is doing is because of the lobbying and the extent of the Jewish lobby. And that comes from the fact that they're economically, you know, quite strong. so that they can put their own candidates in, et cetera, et cetera. We don't have that economic strength. We don't have that voting strength. So, you know, we can't determine our future here in the United States. And again, mm-hmm. just one last point, that's why my father said that we had to unite as African people around the world. At that time, it was 400 million. At this point in time, we have 1.5 billion. So if we unite with each other, we have some possibility of changing the direction of the world and making things better for us as a people.
Well, and let me ask you about this, because one of the issues about, you know, that has been said oftentimes is it's not the president, it's the system that doesn't change. My understanding is you have gone through a number of presidents, a number of different presidents, different administrations, the same president twice, et cetera, pushing for the exoneration of your posthumous exoneration of your father to clear his records for all of his charges to be cleared and dropped as a result of history. And yeah. the system will not mm-hmm. allow, forget who's the president, that mm-hmm. the system will not allow that to be cleared. What do you think of that, and why do you think that is?
Well, I think we've said it, you know, it's a system, and it's not the president per se. And the system is an elitist system that controls the economics of the country. It controls the judiciary. It controls the Congress, you know, by voting certain people in and expecting certain favors. So there's a system there that's in existence that is basically not going anywhere. Unless there's some sort of cataclysm, which, as I mentioned, it hasn't changed in 100 years, significant.
Are you familiar with the Uhuru movement?
It may not change for another 50 years. I don't know.
Familiar with the Uhuru movement, the African People's Socialist Party?
Yes, I mentioned that the socialist movement also is under attack. So all the ones that have stood up for change, certainly the African ones that have stood up for change, have been attacked in one way or another. If they can't be gotten out of the way, then they've been shot and killed. So, you know, this is what the system has done over time to leadership, strong leadership within the Black community.
Well, you know, I compare, to me, when I look at what happened to your father, when I look at what happened to Paul Robeson, et cetera, and I see what's happening with what has happened with the Uhuru movement, I basically see that as one long system of actions, in that, you know, after all of these years, the African People's Socialist Party, and what is their position? It's a very Garveyite position. You know, their position is Black people need to be self-sufficient. They need to start their own businesses in their own communities. They need self-empowerment. Mm-hmm. They need to work in the poor Black community. And this is what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And the FBI came in and launched an attack on them. And in my opinion, they were doing something very similar to your father's philosophy. Philosophy, as it were.
Mm-hmm. No question about it. And so were the Panthers. It was a community organization, you know, to defend the community and to help the community to develop. And of course, the FBI came in and shot them up and destroyed the Panthers. So it's not new. It's been going on for 100-plus years. And it's a part of the system to maintain its dominance over, you know, us as a minority here, 15% of the population or what have you. That's how we have control within the system. And, you know, some of us get certain positions by virtue of our abilities, et cetera, et cetera. We may even get to be president. We've gotten to be one president. We've gotten to be vice president. And, you know, we've gotten to be the head of the council or what have you. So, you know, I mean, people have advanced within the system. And, you know, and the other areas where we have advanced too, in terms of the middle class and some elites in terms of business. So, you know, there have been some advances, but again, the system as quota, this type of capitalism will not allow any other social system to survive within its borders. And a hegemonic program around the world, too. That's why there's a fight against Russia. That's why there's a fight against China, who are, you know, two dominant forces in the world that do not espouse the same type of capitalism as the United States.
Once again, we're talking with Dr. Julius Garvey, the son of Marcus Garvey. Next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, Fort Washington, Maryland.
Your thoughts?
Come on.
You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, beautiful, beautiful. Hey, listen, my name is Maury, and I live in Fort Washington. I'm 87 years old, soon to be 88. Listen, I could cut across many years. I began working with the then NAACP in February 1957 in Georgia. And we worked hard at everything that you've ever heard of and did make some cosmetic changes, such as eating in restaurants and riding certain public transportations and so forth, using bathrooms along the road. Now, what I have noticed, especially since Obama was president, is that white America is working pretty hard at turning back the calendar. And right now, they're more aggressively doing that. Now, as I see it, if they are able to do it, they have the numbers, they're like 60% of the population. We are 13, and other people of color are like 12. So they have the numbers to do that. If they choose to do it, and they do it, then we can lose these little cosmetic things, which I call them, eating in restaurants. We can lose that. We can lose voting rights. They're killing that already. We can lose staying in hotels along the road. I was 20 years old, 19 years old before I was able to do that. Stay in a hotel or a motel along the road, bathrooms along the road. That's pretty serious. But they can do that. They have the numbers to do that. 60% of the population, we are about 13, and the other people of color are roughly 12, but many of them are going to vote for the white people. I have lots of experience with other populations, the Spanish, the Mexicans, and they're not going to vote for black. They don't want anything to do with black people, actually.
Did you have a question for Dr. Garvey?
I have a million, but I have hundreds, maybe 100, but that's
just one will do. We don't have time, but we can do one. How's that?
Well, the thing is, I don't want to hug up all the time. I just want to lay out some things based on my experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I was simply 88.
Yeah. Well, did you have like a question? Because you know we have other colors and other things going on. But did you have a particular question, or if you just is your comment, we certainly appreciate you calling, and that's fine too.
Yeah, I would rather just make statements than to ask questions.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Certainly appreciate the call. And we got thank you very much, Dr. Garvey. All right. One more caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, Louise from Baltimore.
All right, Louise, speak loud so we can hear you. Make sure your phone, your mouth is real close to the phone, because sometimes we have trouble on radios. But go ahead.
Okay, I have a comment before I have a real quick question, because Mr. Garvey talked about the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, which was actually passed, but it was watered down. And the Minimum Wage Act actually excluded us. That's the reason why waitresses and can't get minimum wage right now, because back then it was basically African Americans who held those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And those jobs that we held were actually excluded from these laws. And so, but my question is, if it's the system, and it doesn't matter who's the president because it's the system, why participate in the system? Why? What difference does it make? That's my question.
Thank you very much for the call. Dr. Garvey.
Hi. Yeah, I do appreciate that question. I think that, you know, that was the question my father was asking and really answered. I mean, you know, you can be domiciled within the country, but you don't have to participate within the system, allowing the system to dictate everything that you do. You can have your own communities, and you can have your own churches. You can have your own businesses, of whatever type that you want. You can have your own schools. But you see, integration took over the mentality of the African Americans. And you know, don't forget that a law was passed based on the feeling among several African American professors, et cetera, that you could not have separate and equal education. If your education was separate, it could not be equal. Now, obviously, there was a lot of truth in that because black education was not being funded.
Right.
But the point was that we did have black teachers at that time in black communities, you see. So when integration came along in terms of the school system, the teachers, many of them lost their jobs. Kids had to be bussed across to go into white schools. They suffered all of that ignominy, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's not that clear cut. You see, and our leadership that was stronger and came forward at that time moved African Americans towards an integration into a system that they felt over time, you know, would accept them, us as equals. You know, if you believe that, then that's okay, and it may happen. It hasn't happened, certainly, in the last 100 years that we are intimately aware of. You know, as you were saying, they usually find some way to water down the law or to avoid it, whether it's redlining or whatever. You know, the last crisis, the 2008 and so on, you know, with housing, I mean, that came down heavily on us. If you look at what happened with COVID, we were the ones that died more, you know, because of multiple, you know, reasons in terms of the food that we eat, in terms of the jobs that we have, in terms of the stress in our lives, et cetera, et cetera. So it's difficult to for us or fight for an equal system or equal citizenship in the system. We'll always be a minority. So it's going to be very, very difficult to obtain that within our country that's basically racist.
Dr. Garvey, let me ask you this. You know, in the past, we had great leaders, and they were, as I said, your father, your father, Marcus Garvey. The Paul Robesons, the Martin Luther Kings, the Malcolm X's. These were people who were outside of the system. You know, they didn't run for office. They didn't try to be a part of the system. They stood outside the system, and they were true leaders of the black community. We don't seem to have that today. We don't seem to see the person who is, whether they're a preacher or a community, you know, or an organizer or a person from the community, we don't seem to have those kinds of voices. What do you think about that?
Our leadership has been destroyed. you just mentioned it.
All
the tall stalks that have stood up in the field have been cut down. So, you know, what's left? Go along with the system. Because if you don't go along with the system, you'll be marked for extinction in some way or other. You know, some have been bought off. We know that.
Yeah.
Some have been bought off and financially or being brought into the system and given certain perks, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, that's the name of the game, and that's the way it is. And you know, you can analyze it over the last 100 plus years or whatever, from 1776, and you can see the history of the United States of America. I mean, it was built, you know, on the basis of white supremacy, despite the flowery language, you know. but never lived up to the flowery language, and I don't know that it ever will. We can keep trying. But I don't know that it ever will.
Next caller. We've got one last caller. You are the last caller. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Tabu calling from Washington.
Brother Tabu, what's happening?
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Hello?
Uh-oh, I have a feeling that Tabu's not hearing.
Oh, no, I hear you.
There you go, Tabu.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a weekly caller. We got to show you respect. What's happening?
Well, questions here. No, we don't have much time. What type of government, Mr. Garvey, would you feel we should live under if you're talking about representing black people all over the world? Now, that sounds like globalism to me. Now, you know, here in America, that was one of the problems that we blacks here in America who actually are mixed people. You know, your dad, from what I understand, and keep in mind, I didn't know him. And I would ask you, did he have a problem with light skin or mixed people? And if you want to rule under a pigmentized, rule by just African people or people's skin color, is that a pigmentocracy? I guess the question would be, do you want a government that you're going to set up that you feel would have been set up or should be set up? It's judged by skin color. That's a pigmentocracy. And the question, what type of economic system would this whole movement or government of people be if you had your way?
And I guess, Dr. Garvey, you got to add this. Was your father talking about a government per se? Anyway, Dr. Garvey.
No, not in the United States of America, not a separate government, but an independent economic system and an independent social system in terms of one's community, and certainly also an independent religious system and an independent educational system. Because just as, you know, one of the callers, you know, talked about before, the book, The Miseducation of the Negro, you know, we are being educated by the people who have destroyed us and enslaved us and dehumanized us over time. So, you know, they're not going to say that that's what they have done. So we will never know reality if we allow ourselves to be educated by the same people that dehumanized us, because they'll always put their twist on the facts. So that's the type of independence that my father was talking about within the United States of America. Now, where there's a black majority, of course, he's talking about nationhood. Mm-hmm. And that was in the Caribbean, and that was in Africa. And he was not involved in a pigmentocracy. As a matter of fact, the pigmentocracy was against Marcus Garvey. Certain people like Du Bois, you know, called him a black man with thick lips and that sort of thing, you know, because Du Bois himself was light-skinned. And, of course, as you know, that has been present within the United States of America and other places, too, that Quadroon and Octoroon and et cetera, et cetera. But that was not had nothing to do with Marcus Garvey's ideology. He said all black people. You know, whatever your complexion was. And he said that publicly, and that was the situation in the organization itself. It had nothing to do, you know, with pigment. It had to do with character. It had to do with your contribution and who you were in terms of an African, you know, person willing to work and develop and help other people. The thing about globalization, if you look and you see what the United States has done, I mean, they have developed globalization. And if you look at who the allies are, I mean, they're Canada, you know. We did away with the native population in the same way the United States did. It's Australia, which did away with the native population the same way the United States did. And, you know, and a significant part of Latin America, which did the same thing. So, you know, they have a globalization program and process. There's nothing wrong with that for them. We need a globalization program and process. And that was what my father put forward. Because we as an African people are a global people. We're everywhere. We're not just in Africa. We're in Central America. We're in the Caribbean. We're in South America. We have, 100 million African people in Brazil or whatever, you know, so we're all over the place. But we need to be united, mm-hmm. because with unity, there is strength. But, you know,
and if I may, Dr. Garvey, and I think he was saying there are black people all over the world, and all over the world there are places where many places where black people are oppressed, so that black people all over the world needed to come together financially and economically, needed to work together to recognize there's black people oppressed all over the world. So black people all over, not some globalized government, but as an international community and diaspora, come together to support each other in a positive way economically.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, it's happening at the present time. You know, certainly the relationship
between Africa and supposedly the diaspora is the mm-hmm. sixth region, which includes the United States of America. Certainly CARICOM, which represents the different countries in the Caribbean with black majorities. There's the African Union, you know, CARICOM dialogue that is going on with a significant economic development on the drawing board. So it's happening.
Unfortunately,
that was the idea of Marcus Garvey as well. Yeah.
Yep. And unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I certainly appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. We've been talking with Dr. Julius Garvey. He is the son of Marcus Garvey. Dr. Garvey has a book coming out in November. The name of the book is Justice for Marcus Garvey. Look for me in the whirlwind. Yeah. It's available now on broadleafbooks.com and on Amazon. You can pre-order. Dr. Garvey's working hard to try to push our government to posthumously drop all the charges, clear all the charges against his father and clear his father's name from the setup that he suffered from the judicial lawfare that was used against him by the U.S. government. Thank you very much, Dr. Garvey, and I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us here on 89.3 WPFW in Washington, D.C.
It's been my pleasure, Garland. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Julius Garvey, what a pleasure to have him on. You can find me online at Garland N on Telegram. Garland N, that's my first name and the first letter of my last name. Garland N at gmail.com. That's my email address. And Garland Nixon on Facebook and, of course, YouTube. Thanks. I'm out.